Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 142 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Catwoman number 9, Justice League Dark number 9, Supergirl number 28, Superman number 9, The Flash number 66, Wonder Twins number 2, Wonder Woman number 66, Supergirl season 4 episode 15, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, Arrow season 7 episode 16, Star City 2040, Black Lightning season 2 episode 16, The Book of Apocalypse, Chapter 2, The Omega, Flash, Season 5, Episode 17, Time Bomb, and Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 6, Doom Patrol Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. First up for DC news, Chelsea Zhang, best known for her role on Disney Channel's Andy Mack, has been cast as Rose Wilson Ravenger in DC Universe's Titans streaming series.
I am excited to see where season 2 goes. I'm really excited to see their version of Deathstroke pairing him up with Ravager, his daughter. Pretty cool. I'm excited to see what they do.
Yes, and I thought I remembered seeing something about them looking for somebody for Jericho too. So, you know, they're bringing the whole family in. All right, and up next for DC news, they've released a Legends Tomorrow mid-season trailer. It'll look freaking awesome.
Yeah, I've been seeing it playing. It's played a lot. I would say more so than normal CW superhero show commercials do, which I think is good because it seems like they're actually trying to remind people that this show is coming back.
Yeah, and it's been gone for several months.
I don't remember them doing this before with other shows that have gone on hiatus. I don't remember them doing that much with Supergirl. I don't remember them doing it that much with Legends previously. So I kind of appreciate that they're trying to, you know, like, hey guys, this show's coming back.
Maybe they're trying to boost ratings too.
Yeah, I would believe that.
And we saw some funny stuff in the trailer. I saw Sarah wearing the Supergirl costume. I saw Nate wearing the Arrow's costume. I'm like, wonder what that's all about. So I'm excited for it to come back. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Do you enjoy TV shows, movies, video games, comics, or novels? Do you enjoy listening to people discuss geeky topics without getting bent out of shape when they disagree? If you do, then the 42cast is right for you. We're a podcast with a rotating cast of guests that discusses a new topic every week. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Google Play, or 42cast.com. You can also support us and the entire ESO Network by going to patreon.com/ESO Network. That's the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All Right, let's talk Catwoman number 9. Before we get into this issue, Cletus, I have to tell you, I was confused about this story. Last issue, we left Catwoman caught by penguin goons, and it seemed like that issue was supposed to be continued. But this issue starts off a brand new story with a different writer. So what happened to the penguin story?
I am 100% sure this was a filler story.
It just seemed weird.
What I don't understand is why they didn't just not put out an. This clearly is filling a gap while they work on the next issue, which is why not just wait and put it out? My guess is Catwoman is a pretty high-selling title for them, I'm thinking. I have no numbers to base that off of. And so they don't want to miss a publish date for that because they don't want to risk losing the sales on the title. But, I mean, this was fine. It was a fine title, but I was confused too because I was like, I didn't pay attention enough at the beginning to notice that Jones wasn't writing. So the art didn't throw me off because I knew she wasn't drawing anymore. But I was like, within like 2 or 3 pages, I was like, this writing's not right. And then I went back and I was like, oh, okay. So I mean, it was fine. I mean, this is the kind of cat story I would normally expect to read. To be totally honest with you, that one, like, it's just sort of like focusing on her being a thief, and it was okay. It was a very like mediocre, I thought, run of the mill Catwoman story. Not nearly as good or interesting as what Jones has been doing.
It was pretty good, I have to say. One of the things I liked about it was the rivalry between Detective Dean Hadley and Selina. And I loved how Selina played off of Detective Hadley's weaknesses to make the heist, while still leaving the detective enough evidence to put away the broker. So I did like that. What it kind of reminded me of is, you know, Catwoman's a villain, but she can be a hero sometimes also. So she walks that fine line sometimes. And I think her recent relationship with Bruce has her walking that fine line a little more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. This felt very much like it was the writer trying to write Ocean's 11. And I just, it was not a poor attempt at it. I want to emphasize this was a perfectly fine comic. But I also thought that the writer thought that the heist was more clever than it really was. I don't know if that's just me, but like they were clearly going for the like Ocean's 11. Like they even had like character intros. Like I can't remember the guy. It was like, I can't remember. But they would flash like Johnny Smith. I know that wasn't one of the names, but Johnny Smith like pasted over the guy's picture. But then the heist was really just like, you guys go in dressed as cops and steal the stuff. Like it wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't that it was dumb. It wasn't a dumb heist, but it wasn't that clever either.
But I'm hoping we get back to that penguin story because.
Oh, we will. We definitely will. I would be concerned if Jones had written this because then I'd be like, wait, what? But the fact that this was a different writer, first off, and then also a different artist from the artist that they have that took over from Jones. So it's just a filler issue. I'm a little bit surprised that they bothered with this, but it could be worse. We have read much worse filler issues than this.
Yes, we have. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Justice League Dark number 9. All right, so this issue opens up with Khalid and Man-Bat, and we kind of get a history lesson from Khalid about his origins and more information about the Lords of Order. I'm glad they included that in there, because I'm not, you know, I wasn't very familiar with that information. We also see the demon Etrigan is attacked by the Lords of Order, sending the demon back to hell, and Jason Blood returning to an old age. We also found out from Khalid that he's saying that, you know, that Mira was already dead, that was already a lost cause. I'm really interested in this character and him picking up the mantle of Dr. Fate. I know you read some of his stuff back in the New 52.
Yeah, I'm actually, like, this has been a very pleasant surprise. The fact that they brought him back at all. I've talked about that before. I was shocked. I just thought he was going to be lost to, you know, the end of the New 52. But then I really like how they're reincorporating him into the story. And just the story in general, I love the way it's escalating. Like, you really feel the pressure that all these characters feel right now. Like, it really feels like it's all about to collapse on them. This has been good. This has been a really good series. I am... My one thing I'm slightly concerned about is that... I mean, I could be wrong, but it feels like we're... I would say within 10 issues of this story ending, right? Wouldn't you say?
Probably.
And I'd be curious to see where it goes next, because really, from issue one, has really been this entire story arc, which has been great. But then where do you go from there would be my only concern. But I'll take what we get right now, which has been a very, very good story.
Yeah. And they've been doing a good job of the fallout, like in Wonder Woman's story. I mean, it's not interfering with the story that's going on in Justice League Dark, but we're getting a different take on what Wonder Woman's dealing with in her own comic book with the Olympus has fallen somehow. And all the magical creatures coming in to her title, and some of the gods like Aphrodite. So, you know, it's been really interesting. Follow both sides of the story in the two different titles. And you don't have to read one of them to get the whole story in the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree. What's one thing I really like about this title is that it's a really good story, but it's not requiring you to read anything else. And it's also not stepping on anybody else's story. I think that's one thing that I get a little annoyed with. And I will say even King has clearly had an impact on some other books too. To be fair, I like books that just tell their own story and don't screw other writers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let you tell your own great story and let other people tell hopefully their own great story too. And I think that's what this book is doing. I am a big fan of it.
Yeah. You have to say the same thing about Justice League Odyssey too. That story is going along pretty good without stepping on anybody's toes either.
That's true.
So
that one, I feel like that one benefits from its premise because it's so intentionally far out to the far reaches of the universe. It's basically impossible for it to interfere.
But it still ties into the regular Justice League title.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So, yeah, that kudos to DC on that aspect of it. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Supergirl number 28. In this issue, we have Supergirl and the Omega Men battling through the Supergirl clones. They defeat Hokum, who teleports, only leaving his hand. I think that scene was kind of gruesome.
I thought it was a little gruesome, and then I didn't totally get the point of it when he's then killed like five panels later. He's killed, and I was like, what was the point of taking his hand? You know what I mean? Like, his hand, losing his hand makes sense if you're gonna bring him back later somehow. I get, to me, otherwise I don't know, I didn't totally get the point of that.
I don't know what the point of it either. I just thought it was gruesome.
But unnecessarily so. That was my thing. It was like, I don't care if you want him to have his hand cut off, but like, if you're just going to then kill him out in space five panels later, like, why? I don't know. That was just my thing. I was like, cut off his hand if you want. Like, fine. Then have him come back next time and be like, this is for my hand. Great. Awesome. Okay. Yeah, but like, if you're just gonna kill the guy, like, that just seems, I don't know, that seems like gore for the sake of gore, which in a Supergirl book, this felt out of place.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. We also see a weird, an awkward moment with Supergirl and Rander, the Tamaranian, because he gives Supergirl a full charge, but they're basically holding hands when the other guy comes in that's been hanging with Crypto, Xander, and kind of gives them a weird look. like a little bit of jealousy going on there. So we had that going on. And then the final thing I want to talk about with this issue is it looks like maybe the comic is getting back to the story it's kind of sidetracked from, because we see the Circle put a hit out on Supergirl, and the whole mystery so far in what's been going on in the story arc, multiple story arcs now, but you know, it's all about the mystery of Rogal Czar, and this story got way on a tangent from that, and it looks like maybe they're trying to bring it back to that a little bit.
Thankfully, I really feel like they took a risk with how long they've prolonged this story. I just questioned how many people are going to care by the time they get around to it. Realistically, how many people have stuck around on the Supergirl title to find out?
Us.
I'm going to be honest with you. If you and I were not doing a DC podcast in which one of our focuses was reviewing comics, I certainly would not have read this.
You know what? I have to agree with you. I'd have probably dropped it by now, too.
There's no way. I legitimately would have read at least the first issue, because I was very intrigued by the Rogal Czar thing. And then once the book went off on whatever it decided to do, I'd have been out. I'd been like, I'm not going to spend my money on – like, comics aren't cheap. If we weren't doing this podcast, there's no way. There's no way I'd still be reading this.
And I probably wouldn't be either. I'd probably dropped off my radar by now. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Superman number 9. This issue opens up with a Superman dream about the Super Family that I found really odd to include in this story.
It did not fit. I don't know what Bendis was trying to get at with that. I'm sure he's trying to hint at some sort of possible future storyline that I'm pretty sure, knowing Bendis, that he's trying to hint at something he's going to write later, but it totally derailed the beginning of the comic.
Agreed.
And then especially, they had to then go back. There was a really forced line where Lois is like, our son was just stuck in a wormhole and aged, is telling us how we got out of it. And I was like, yeah, we just read the last issue. It was one of those like really terribly canned lines that was trying to clue in readers that hadn't read the previous issue, but it was just like, come on, like that's a terrible line of dialogue.
Yeah, that was a terrible way to start this issue too, and it didn't fit in with the rest of the story at all.
No, and I didn't really think about it when I finished the comic either. Like, it wasn't interesting enough of a tease for me to be like, ooh, but what was that about?
Yeah, because you basically,
I just want to know more about the crime syndicate.
Right. So we find out from John that Ultraman had taken him prisoner and trapped him in a volcano. He doesn't know how long he had been there for, but we do learn that Ultraman came to visit him all the time and talk and talk and a talk, apparently. Because Ultraman doesn't have any friends. Which makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought that was very dark. I thought that was, frankly, darker than I would have expected from the main Superman title. Like, when you really, like, it wasn't, like, overtly dark, but really, when you get, like, that was some deep psychological torture that John was subjected to for months, probably?
Years, so it looks like.
Well, we don't know how much he aged just from that. The comic is unclear, but like that's pretty dark. It was well written. Don't get me wrong. It was well written, but I was like, I don't know that I like this. Like, this isn't really what I kind of want to read with Superman's son. I don't know. When they introduced the idea of Superman having a family and him having a son, one of the stories that I would want to read would not include his son being psychologically tortured for months to a year.
Agreed. I'm wondering where they're going with this. What is Bendis' plan for John? He's growing him up for what? Why?
I maintain that Bendis had no interest in the current status quo of Superman when he inherited the title, and has been slowly writing it out so that he can write what he wants to write. I will go to my grave with that unless he at some point explicitly says otherwise, and even then I'd have a hard time believing him.
Do you think he Bendis is growing John up so he can send him off on his own?
I could be wrong. I'm not Bendis. I have no insight onto what he's doing. But to me, this feels like he's growing him up so that he can be like, see, I didn't kill him. He's still around. And then just toss him aside and be like, yeah, let, you know, Young Justice or Teen Titans or whatever figure out what to do with that character, but I'm done with it. Personally, that's what it feels like to me. It feels like he's just sort of like acquiescing to like, oh, see, I didn't kill him. Just getting rid of him.
We could have some great stories with the family. I love what Tomasi was doing with it.
I think Bendis could write that too. I'm just a little frustrated that he's basically just decided not to. That's what's frustrating to me. I really think he could do it. Just a perfectly good job writing similar stories to what Tomasi was doing. Different, obviously his own thing, but like, there's not a doubt in my mind that he could do it. And I just think he didn't want to, which is frustrating.
And we know he knows how to write teen superheroes. Ultimate, yeah. Spider-Man, it's a perfect example.
Right, exactly.
So I don't know what he's doing here either. All right. Well, the issue wraps up. We see John escape from the volcano. He makes his way to the Hall of Justice on Earth 3, where he comes face to face with Superwoman, his mother, and she wants to kill him. So that's kind of where we leave this issue.
I have to say, I like that the crime syndicate is involved in this, but I was confused. I am not a stickler for continuity. I don't really care that much. But one thing I am confused about is, to my understanding, Forever Evil is currently still canon. That it is still currently part of DC continuity. If it's not, that's fine. I really don't care. It's a good story on its own. But I believe it is. And that is a very finite story in regards to the crime syndicate. They show up in that, and it's for the first time that this version of the Justice League has never encountered them. And they do not exist at the end of Forever Evil. And so I was very confused reading this, because it's definitely the exact same roster. Like, it's not the classic. It's the combo. It's all the classic crime syndicate characters, but it's also got the new additions from Forever Evil, which includes Deathstorm, the evil Firestorm. That was first introduced in Forever Evil. So, like, it's clearly the modern version of the crime syndicate, but in that, A, they're still alive. B, Ultraman references that they have encountered that Earth multiple times. So I'm just confused as if Bendis just doesn't care, which is probably the case.
Probably, because we've seen him not care before in other stories. At least I have.
Right, but it's just odd because they do. I don't know. I know I'm caring more about this than I should. I was just confused when I was reading it. So I'm like, you're clearly referencing the modern crime syndicate, which is great. They're really good, but they're also very dead.
I can't comment too much on it because I haven't read that story.
Anyway, it's not a big deal. I was just confused because Superman is certainly, I'm pretty sure Bendis' Superman is in continuity, but maybe Bendis is the one that's off on his own world.
Bendis is off in his own little world.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I almost wonder if it's just Superman is just telling his own story, and it's the one that's not really connected to anything, which it might be partly why we've still got a young John and this not young John.
I guess that's possible.
Yeah, maybe it's just like Bendis was just like, I'm just going to write Superman stories and it's not going to be affected by
what's going on in the rest of DC.
Any DC continuity. That would be fine. I'm fine with that. I don't know. I would like some sort of clarity on that.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, because what I don't want is for the book to operate as if it's not connected and then to all of a sudden connect it. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be like, wait, but okay.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue this week. The Flash number 66. This issue was all about the Trickster. We got to peek into his origin, his life at Iron Heights, and his big escape. Looks like the Trickster is on deck next to take on the Flash. One of the things I noticed in this issue, we didn't really have any Flash in this issue, except for then the flashback sequence.
I was honestly only mildly interested in this. I also thought, as per usual, that Williamson thought he was being much more clever than he really is. Especially with the build-up towards Jesse James' escape from Iron Heights. It was weird because the whole comic was building up his fear of heights, and then we find out at the end that was a lie, that was part of his act. But then his escape around Iron Heights was centered on the idea that he was actually afraid of heights. And so I was like, wait, you got to make up your mind, dude. It can't be a trick, but also be the truth. And then, like, I don't know, he just felt cliche, I guess. I don't know, the whole, you will know my name. It's all about buddy. I don't know. It felt so, like, cartoonish. But like, if you had done those lines, but it had been like a sort of satirical, funny comic, those lines would have fit because they would have fit that sort of like absurd, over the top. But he was trying to write it serious, which has been always sort of my problem with him on The Flash, is he writes so grandiose and like, this is the next big major thing with The Flash, and this will be a story that will go on for decades as a milestone for The Flash, and it's an inherently silly story. And that was sort of like this one. It's a freaking story about the Trickster, and he's writing it as if it's like this, like, I was the greatest con man to ever walk the face of the earth. I conned like no one could con, and then I lost my touch. They'll know by name. I'm like, it's the Trickster. This is a book about the Trickster. Come on, man. Like, that was – I'm sorry. I was rolling my eyes, especially at the end when he's making all these just like, they will know my name. They will know my name. I'm like, okay. You do realize you're writing a comic about the Trickster, right? Like, and it's a he's like a minor villain for the Flash. We're not going to change that. You're not going to write a story that's going to suddenly make the Trickster the Joker.
The only reason I know the Trickster besides the comics is because Mark Hamill played him in the 90s Flash.
Can't do stories about the Trickster. You absolutely can. It's just like, don't write this absurd, grandiose thing where all of a sudden the Trickster is actually really a master criminal. Come on. Like, it was just so dumb. I don't know. I will admit I'm increasingly biased against his book. Like, I'm starting to look for things to be annoyed about, but like, I felt very justified when I ended this book. I was like, seriously, get over yourself, man. Like, this isn't that big of a story.
Yeah, you're right. It wasn't that big of a story. It was mediocre. Well, basically, like, what we expect from Williamson.
Well, even if it was well written, but going with that tone and that level of seriousness is just absurd. Like, write it tongue in cheek and it's fine. I could absolutely go, like, if you did this like Kite Man, where he's got these delusions of grandeur, but he's actually like completely inept, that's hilarious. That would be really great. I would love that comic, but he's writing it seriously. Like, he's writing it straight-faced. Like, no, he legit is, like, the greatest con man of all time. And he lost touch, but now he's back. And the world will never be the same because of the Trickster. Okay. Okay.
All right, you done ranting?
I will be until the next time we review The Flash, so I'll be good for about 2 weeks.
Okay. I was already done talking about this guy. You gave it more time than I wanted to give it. All right, let's move on to our next title. Wonder Twins number 2. I gotta say, Cletus, I'm continuing to enjoy how silly and fun this comic is. Definitely in the style of the Super Friends cartoon. Drunk. I can't even Drunkula. Pronounce the name. Drunk.
It was so funny. This comic, Mark Russell is hilarious. He is such a funny writer. I know I said this the last time we reviewed this, but I really hope this helps springboard him into bigger and more DC titles, because this dude is hilarious.
The Scrambler. I loved it. I loved the freaking egg on his shirt. The Legion of Annoyance. Oh, man. It was hilarious. I like the addition of Gleek in this issue. I mean, we didn't really see much about Gleek, but we know he's coming. And we know he's part of the Wonder Twins lore, so I'm excited to see what they're going to do with him.
Yeah, I am a big fan of this comic. I can't wait for the next issue just because, I know it's going to be good. I know it's going to be really funny. I really like the art. I think the art style is perfectly suited to what the story that's being written. It's great. This is just an all-around great comic. I highly, highly recommend it to people.
I do too. All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Wonder Woman number 66. The issue opens up with our favorite Olympus creatures, the Minotaur, the Pegasus, and the Satyr, as Maggie has driven them from the District of Columbia all the way to the Rocky Mountain National Park. Man, I love these characters. And I love when we get a story that focuses on them.
I was honestly a little disappointed when it turned into a Wonder Woman story. To be honest with you, I was like, oh. I was kind of hoping this was going to be a story for you guys again.
Yeah, well, it is sort of, but I love those characters. But got to remember, though, this is Wonder Woman's title.
But to be honest with you, it's such a detour from the main Wonder Woman story that I kind of wanted it to just be about them, because once it became about her, I was like, yeah, but what about her quest?
Yeah, I know she's supposed to be on her quest, but...
And you know, from what I've seen from The Flash, these quests can be pretty draining, so... Wouldn't want her to lose focus.
No. But anyways, Maggie brings the creatures here because she figured this would be a good place for them to basically live because of all the openness and their way from civilization. As our Olympus creatures go into the park, two titans appear and basically lock into battle. And they basically have to call Wonder Woman for help. Apparently, the titans are just too much for Wonder Woman to handle alone. So she calls on Amanda Waller to allow her to borrow Giganta. And, of course, Giganta doesn't want to help unless she's making some money off of it.
Naturally, as one does.
Me, I like the story.
Oh, no, I liked it, too. Don't get me wrong. I was just, once the potential for this to be a story about that gang of mythical creatures, I was like, oh, sweet. And it kind of was. You're right. It was like half a story for them. I felt almost a little disappointed it wasn't a full story with them, just because the last one was so good.
Yeah. This one ended as to be continued kind of thing. So I'm hoping the Olympus creatures play more of a role in helping Wonder Woman against the Titans. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'd like to see it.
I wouldn't be surprised. I could definitely see that happening. I am very intrigued by a Wonder Woman Giganta team up. I think that in itself was really cool too. So I have no complaints there. I enjoyed the first half of the story with the gang. I liked one woman showing up and sort of going on her own story with Giganta. I think that's also interesting. And I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, if it does end up tying into the main story at the end anyway.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It is a competent writer writing this, after all. You know.
Yes.
I trust her to actually know how to construct a story, Williamson. You know, but that's beside the point.
Now, one thing I wanted to call attention to was when Amanda Waller let Giganta go with Wonder Woman, she also told Wonder Woman she owes her a favor, and I'm expecting this writer to pay up on that in the future.
Oh yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
So I'm looking forward to that too, because I'm just curious what Amanda Waller would want Wonder Woman to do for her. I'm sure it's going to be something Wonder Woman's not going to be happy about.
I think that's probably a safe bet.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com. We all smoke down here, Georgie.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 4, Episode 15, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? John Cryer as Lex Luthor was great in this episode. He was cunning, he was manipulative, intelligent, and he had an evil sense of style when his plans went his way. The exact kind of Lex I like.
I thought it was a very well-written Lex. I'm still not completely sold on John Cryer as Lex Luthor, but the part was very well-written. I will go that far. I liked him. I liked him a lot for most of it when he was sort of like the pretending to be, I wouldn't say reformed, but semi-defeated Lex. I liked him in that. But the Lex towards the end, I thought he got a little silly. It was like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's John Cryer playing Lex Luthor. I don't know if that makes sense. But like, as soon as he, like, revealed, like, just kidding, I gave my I set the bomb off 10 minutes ago. I thought that was a very Ozymandias thing. As soon as we had that Ozymandias moment, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's John Cryer.
I liked him playing over the top when it was going his way. But when things don't go his way, we saw where he was angry and yelling and stuff. It made sense to me for him to be that way, to be over the top when things are going his way, but things don't go his way, being angry about it. And, you know, he doesn't like to be out of control of things, and that just made sense to me.
I agree with the anger part. I think that's very Lex, but to me, Lex, I always think of the Justice League Lex. I feel like that's one of the most perfect representations of that character I've ever seen. It was always very cool, calm, and collected, unless he was losing. And then that facade would drop, and you would see the angry man underneath that. That's the Lex I like. I'm not a huge fan of the, like, cartoony villain when he's winning that we kind of got towards the end there. That's just my personal taste.
So, I have to say,
I can't complain. Overall, though, this was a really good Lex. You could have done way, way worse. I want to emphasize, I thought this was a very well-written Lex Luthor.
Yeah, better than we got in the movies.
Yes.
So I really liked the dynamic between Lex and Lena with their great love-hate relationship, and the fact that Lena can't really trust Lex, and for good reason, as we find out later in this episode. When this episode opens up, James Olsen is lying on the floor of his office because last week's episode ended with him being shot. At the beginning of this one, we see somebody reach down and turn on his signal watch, and Supergirl comes to the rescue, but they don't show who it is at that point. So, we also had the addition of James Olsen's sister in this episode. And I kind of liked her character. I wouldn't mind seeing her pop up more in the future.
I was very surprised when her character showed up. I was like, well, that's kind of out of left field. I assume she's going to pop up. I don't know why you wouldn't have her pop up again.
We talked about this on DC News a while back, I'm pretty sure, that she was cast for this season, or towards the end of the season or something. I don't remember if it was just for the episode or what the DC News was, but I remember talking about it.
They made too big of a deal of her character, I feel like, for her to just be one episode. I frankly wouldn't get the point. Like, why go through all of that intro just for her to be at one, you know what I mean? I felt like they laid too much groundwork for that. I could be wrong. I don't get, like, that's a lot of effort for a one-episode character.
Right. So, one of the things we do see is we see Alex is there at the hospital for a lot longer than Kara is. Kara goes off with John because the Martian Manhunter wants to hunt down Manchester Black. So she's gone quite a bit, but she kept having to make excuses up to Alex why she wasn't there, and they just weren't really good excuses.
They were pretty bad.
They were pretty bad. When they had their kind of final confrontation about it, Kara just had to say she was scared, and that's why she left.
I want to talk a little bit about Martian Manhunter's story because it's about half the episode. I'm assuming that what happens to Manchester must partly be what he wanted, because I otherwise don't totally get what he was going for. He also seemed very unperturbed by what was happening to him. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't really seem that upset about it, and I was like, okay, this must be part of your plan. I just didn't totally get it, and I'm assuming that's because they're going to explain it later, but I didn't understand what he was driving at for the most part.
Manchester Black is dead, isn't he?
I think they want you to think that, but I really don't think he is. Just his reaction to him quote-unquote dying did not seem like somebody that was that upset about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was sort of like, okay, let's see what happens with this. And it was like, but just everything leading up to it, it felt like that was what he wanted, and I didn't totally understand why. And I'm assuming that's because they're going to give that explanation later. But that was during the whole thing, I was like, it seems like Manchester wants Martian Manhunter to kill him, but I don't understand why.
Probably because, if you remember, Martian Manhunter was against killing. Manchester Black was for killing. I mean,
but why would you want to force him to kill you, though? Like, that doesn't...
To prove that they're the same.
But what purpose does that serve Manchester when he's dead? That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I don't... Clearly, he's got something else up his sleeve. I just don't know what that thing is yet, because I get what you're saying. I don't think you're necessarily wrong, but, like, you proved your point, but now you're dead. Like, that doesn't...
Unless he's not really dead, then that would make more sense.
No, I don't think he is. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm positive that he's coming back, because otherwise his plan doesn't really make sense. Like, it makes sense if he's coming back. It doesn't make sense if he doesn't come back. I'm pretty sure he is, because it just his story. That is not a satisfying ending to his story, and it was just so, like, convenient, so to speak, in a way that the writers intended. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the writers miswrote this or anything. Like, I get what they're trying to go for. I just am curious to see what that is.
Okay. Do you think it has something to do with the Legion ring? Because John seemed reluctant to give it back to Brainy.
No, I think that's unrelated. The ring, him giving the ring to Brainy, he says this when he talks to Kara. He said it would be him confronting. In his mind, he did kill Manchester. We don't think he actually did, but for him, he's dead. And him giving the ring to Brainy would be him, like, forcing himself to acknowledge the fact that he killed Manchester Black. And he's not really prepared to deal with that, and so he doesn't want to give the ring back. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I do not think – I think the ring is totally unrelated to whatever Manchester Black's plan is.
All right. Well, let's get to the end of this episode. Lex was behind the James shooting, and he basically did it just to get the cure and get free.
I am unsurprised by that, obviously, but I am curious if he's going to basically end up being... I'm a little bit surprised, because they have such a good villain on their hands with the Agent of Liberty. I really feel like it's unnecessary, because it's Lex Luthor. He demands attention.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have to focus on him, which I'm fine with. It's Lex Luthor. I want you to focus on him. But they didn't need to. It feels like they could have just waited on this.
Yeah, they waited on it on purpose. You haven't seen the next episode yet, have you?
I have not.
So, you will find out why in the next episode.
Okay.
What is going on with Lex, and how much Lex has been manipulating things behind the scenes this season.
Gotcha.
So I guess part of why I like John Cryer so much is based on two episodes now, because I've seen the next one too, so.
That's fair.
And I really like what they're doing with Lex as a villain and his character. So, yeah, it's once you see the next episode, it'll bring more perspective in to what's going on with this season. And I'm very excited to talk about it next week. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow, Season 7, Episode 16, Star City 2040. So the show opens up with Felicity giving birth to Mia, and it's the only time we see Oliver in this whole episode. Something that convinces me even more that the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover will be the death of Oliver.
Yeah, I agree.
We get to watch Mia grow up as she's training with Nissa Al Ghul. We learn why Mia's so angry with Felicity and why she hates vigilantes. Because we see Mia find that secret room where she learns that Felicity is still being a vigilante. So that was all interesting. And I found it really interesting getting to see the Glades from the other side of the wall. Because we get to see Mia and William sneak into that company and rescue Felicity.
I think this episode could have taken some notes from the Supergirl writers in regards to their portrayal of Mia, to be honest. Because on paper, I like what they do with her, but in action, it felt like, you remember the first few episodes of Supergirl where it felt like they kept going out of their way to be like, look, she's a girl and she's super strong and look. And like they kept like overemphasizing it. They kept telling you and not just letting her superness just be evident, if that makes sense. They eventually moved away. Like they eventually got comfortable with the fact that Kara was Supergirl and that she's just like Supergirl's awesome and that she just is. And we don't need to tell you that. You can just see that based on what she's doing. And I felt the same way with a lot of the scenes with Mia. I started getting a little bit annoyed towards the end because it felt like the show was telling me to think that she was cool instead of me just appreciating how cool she is.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I didn't get that, but maybe because I wasn't paying attention to them telling me about
it. It was just like, she does really badass stuff. Don't misunderstand me. She does really badass stuff, and instead of just letting that speak for itself, they would always then, like, she'd, like, stand up slowly or, like, she'd get ready to fight and she'd, like, stare and then slowly walk towards the fight. You know, instead of, like, I don't know. It was just it's dumb minor stuff, but it was dumb minor stuff that continued throughout the whole episode that I started to – the more and more it happened, the more and more I started to notice it and started to get annoyed with, where it was, like, they had to emphasize that – oh yeah, she's cool. And then she would do the cool thing, or she would do the cool thing and then she'd freeze so that you could appreciate the cool thing that she just did.
I didn't pay that much attention to it.
Well, I wasn't trying. I promise you, I wasn't trying to. It was one of those things I just started to, they kept doing it and it started to occur to me and then I couldn't help but not notice it. It was just, she's really cool. Like this show has created this very badass character. You don't need to tell me. You don't need to force feed it to me. I accept that. Like I like all of the Arrowverse shows. If I had a problem with female superheroes, I could not enjoy these shows. Like I don't need to be force fed that she's awesome. Just let her be awesome. That was. I know most people who watch this probably would not have that reaction that I did because most people don't care enough to notice dumb little things like that. But for me, I was like, just let this character be the character and let her actions speak for themselves instead of freezing the frame for a minute or having her stand up and slowly look coolly over towards the fight before she goes to join it or see the fight happening and coolly draw her bow and freeze for a pose and then shoot. It was just like, just she's doing really cool stuff. Like just let her do the cool stuff. Like I enjoy it less when she, when you tell me that she's cool. I like it when I just see that she is.
So I didn't get any of that when I was watching
it. I just want to point out that I pointed this out to my girlfriend, who's not particularly a fan of the show of Arrow to begin with. And she was like, yeah, I don't really like what they're doing either. So it's not just me. It's not just me.
Mia is definitely could take Oliver's place as the Green Arrow. Even more than Mikko, I think. At least that's the feeling I've gotten from this character.
Oh, yes. Yes. I would agree with that. I am not sure that I really am intrigued to see that show, though, to be honest with you.
I know. You've told us lots of times.
Well, no, but like especially based on what this felt like a trial run of what that show would look like, and I wasn't really a fan.
I wouldn't have any problem with it. I like Mia as a character. I mean, they need to flesh her out some more and stuff.
See, but I thought they some of the stuff they did with her character was a little like her overreactions to her mom. I thought were over the top. I thought like I understand that it's a CW show and you're gonna have melodrama, but it was some pretty thick melodrama.
Yes, I agree with you there.
She storms out multiple times for things that are not storm out worthy. And okay. I know they try and write it into the show that she realizes that she's been overreacting, but it was like, yeah, but these are still pretty ridiculous. Like, I feel like any reasonable adult would have realized that like a couple years ago.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you on that, but I really enjoyed watching me and William working together.
And yes, I'll agree with you there.
And Team Arrow coming back to finish their mission, but I really like Mia and William as a team. I thought they worked well together. And I wouldn't mind watching more adventures with those two.
I do. The thing I really like about them is how they kind of flip-flop the Oliver-Felicity dynamic, where it's basically like it's literally a gender flip. So you've got the female as the badass hero, and the guy is the kind of tech guy in the background. I thought that was cool. I liked that sort of reversal.
Yeah, that was cool. So, but, you know, overall, I thought that was a pretty cool episode to give us a longer look at the future and what could happen in Arrow. I'm not convinced this is what's going to happen.
But my biggest thing with this is that it is a cool story that they're telling. Like, I like this future story, but I still don't want that to be the actual timeline. Like, because what a bleak ending for the present of the story.
Yeah,
That's the part I can't get over. Is like as much as I like this flash forward story, and I do, it's such a dire outlook for what happens to the team that we're so invested in for the past 7 years.
Yeah, it is, and only time will tell where they're going to go with this. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week: Flash Season 5, Episode 17, Time Bomb. So Sherlock finally pieces together that Eobard Thawne is the person Nora is working with. Thawne tells Nora to tell her father everything that has happened.
That was the best part of the episode, to be honest with you. It reinforced what we've both been saying for I don't know how many podcasts now. This is the story that they should have been focusing on for like the last 8 episodes.
Yes. Even Grace as the new Cicada is not as interesting as the Thawne stuff.
No, I honestly, I will admit it has breathed new life into the Cicada story, but it's beating a dead horse as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's just not an interesting story at this point. Like, sure, yes, it's new and like you've refreshed the story, so we're not watching literally the same thing again, but we're still basically watching the same thing again.
Yeah, she's definitely more dangerous, but
it's still the same story. They basically just their solution to Team Flash kicking Cicada's ass repeatedly was to replace him with a better Cicada, instead of just not doing Cicada anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we talked about the big thing that they kept. I thought the big mistake they made was that Team Flash could reliably beat Cicada. So where were the stakes? And so their solution to that problem, to their credit, they did at least come up with a solution, which is frankly surprising. Their solution was, well, what if we just made Cicada better? Which is just like such a shrug to me. Like, okay, that's not really what we wanted, but okay. At least you're thinking about it, I guess.
Yeah. No, my question, one of my big questions is, how did Grace know to come back in time? Was Thawne behind her coming to the past?
I hope so. I honestly hope so, because that to me sets up what my big hope for all of this is, that this is setting up next season, a great story for next season. If this Thawne thing gets resolved this season, I am going to be so mad, because they have not focused on it at all. And to then just do real quick, just like a Thawne thing right at the end, would be deeply unsatisfying, at least for me.
Yeah, we need to at least have a short arc with him.
You've been teasing this so long that if you then, and then dragging this Cicada story along all season, if you then just go, okay, and now we'll do Thawne right at the end, like, you've tested my patience. And my patience has at least been like, well, at least we'll get Thawne next season. If you then go, no, just kidding, we'll just take care of him right at the end. Like, oh, what was the point? I hope he does, though. I really do hope he is behind the Cicada thing, because that makes his plot all that more interesting. Like, I'm already incredibly intrigued by what he's doing. I love the puppet, the like puppet master stuff that he's pulling. That would make it even better, provided that that all sets up him as the villain next season and not him as the villain at the end of the season.
Now, Barry reacted just like I expected him to when he found out Nora was working with Thawne. Stuck her in the vault, and I'm guessing Thawne knew he'd probably do the same thing too.
I can't say it's the wrong decision. You find somebody out that somebody's an agent for Thawne, intentional or not, like, the safest thing to do is to take them out of the game.
Yep. I know what's going to happen next episode. I mean, Barry is going to make up with Nora. It's just inevitable, but it's going to be an intriguing journey to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, Thawne's such a big villain and a big part of what Barry hates. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
for all
the good and hope Barry has, Thawne is the thorn in his side.
Absolutely, as he should be. I think that's the one thing that this show has consistently done well, truly done justice to the rivalry between Reverse Flash and Flash. Like, that is, you couldn't ask for a better representation between those two.
Yeah, I agree with you. Wasn't it great to have Ralph back in this episode?
Yes.
The Ralph trying to make Camellia the next Peter Parker was freaking hilarious.
And I don't want a spider person.
It was great how they worked Peter Parker / Spider-Man stuff into a DC episode. It was freaking great. Ralph continues to be a great character that I wish they'd utilize a little more. I mean, he's been absent for the last few episodes, but...
We're going to see that next season, to be honest with you, because we know Cisco's leaving. I think he's going to step up and fill that role on a more consistent basis next year.
Yeah, he's going to have to, because somebody's going to have to fill that role, and we know it's not going to be Caitlin.
It certainly won't be. So, just finishing up with the Cicada thing, I was a little bit surprised that they killed Cicada off. Like, you could kind of see it coming. But this whole with his adopted daughter / niece is, it seems so easily preventable. Like, you just give her the cure as a child and she just goes away.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't think of that, because I was thinking of that.
This seems like an easier... I know that they have an explanation in this show that it would be a near impossible surgery or whatever. Okay, I get all that they're doing. But, like, this seems like an even easier solution than the original Cicada, which in itself had reached absurd points of them being unable to beat him. With her, I get that she herself, as an adult, is a much stronger threat that they can't handle. I accept that. But they have the child right there who has not yet become Cicada. Like, that, I don't know what else to say. Like, that's such an avoidable thing.
I know. Boom. You give her the cure, you're done.
I also thought... I think it's a very two-dimensional portrayal of that character for her to be become so twisted in her ideals that it makes sense to her to kill her uncle.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
I got it based on the way they portrayed her character in the episode. It made sense that she killed her uncle, but it doesn't make sense in terms of, like, representing a, you know, three-dimensional character. And it's just, she's so blindly hateful of anything that she's just like, oh, okay, if you're not with me, then you have to be against me. I guess the point is that in the original timeline, that Cicada just twists and poisons her mind so much that she becomes like that, but that is just, I don't know, that's a lot.
She must be a Sith, because only Siths deal in absolutes.
It's just, it was especially confusing to me because they're telling us that her mind is deeply poisoned by the original Cicada, and yet we're seeing the original Cicada have a little bit of a human side left to him, enough to try and stop her from making things worse. That was the thing. It was like, but you're saying that she has completely lost any humanity. Like, she literally just does not have any humanity left in her. Clearly.
Yeah.
But the guy that she learned that from still does. That was the thing. It was like, but this, I don't know. I just really, it's fine that they keep with the solution that they came up with, I guess. But it just would have been so much easier to just have ended this story. Like, it just, they keep having to come up with, like, ways to bend over backwards to explain how this story can continue when they could have just not done that.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 16, The Book of Apocalypse, Chapter 2, The Omega. I found the season finale of Black Lightning disappointing. It had a lot of build-up to be something grand, but in the end, I thought it was lacking. The episode felt like it was trying to be bigger than life, but it wasn't. I thought the big confrontation between Black Lightning and Tobias was pathetic. And as big of a threat as Tobias has been, Black Lightning took him down way too easy.
He kind of went out like a punk, didn't he?
Yeah.
It felt like they built his downfall too quickly, in my opinion. I thought that the foundation that they laid for his downfall made sense. But it felt like they then sped up the process too quickly. It felt like this season, his defeat would have made sense if you built like two extra episodes in, I think, to lay his, like, to show him crumbling more. Because he was strong, I would argue, at the beginning of last episode. And by the end of this episode, he is so completely crumbled from his position of power that he gets his butt whooped by Black Lightning. You know what I mean? Like, it was too fast. It was way too fast. The steps all made sense. Like, I thought that him kind of not being all there and him overplaying his hand was all consistent with his character. I won't disagree there, but it was too fast of a transition. It was like this all happened within a stretch of 24 hours.
Right.
Within the story, I think it all happens in about 24 hours. Like, he is at the height of his power, and within 24 to 36 hours, it is so thoroughly gone that he is locked in a deep, dark hole. That's fast. That's all I'm saying. That is very fast.
That is fast. And then the confrontation with Lala, that was built up also, and then he just gives a command, and he's done. It was like he was no threat at all.
The only thing I can assume is that he's going to come back. I know that they set up that it seems like next season is going to be about Markovia, which is cool, and I'm excited for it, but I have to imagine that Tobias is coming back and that Lala is going to come back, because there's so many loose threads from this season that I just feel like they're going to pick up again.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I didn't get was, why are we putting Tobias in jail? He's just going to get back out. That was my feeling. Why didn't he just get away to come back another day? Instead of putting him in this super prison that he shouldn't be able to break out of. That, I think, needs to be when we're done with Tobias' story. Putting him in there just to break out, I'm not really for that.
I remember last week when we were talking about this, I thought for sure that he would survive the end of this because his story just didn't feel like it was ready to end yet.
Yeah, I thought he could be going the whole nother season as
the main
villain.
I have to admit, it felt like he was defeated because they felt like it was the season finale and you had to have a big win. And they couldn't really figure out how else to give Black Lightning that big win. And it's like, I guess it's got to be Tobias. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like it felt like he lost because it was the season finale, not because it was his time to lose yet.
Agreed.
It was weird. It was uncharacteristically rushed for a show that takes its sweet time with basically everything.
Yep. Just odd, wasn't it?
It was. I agree. It was a little odd. I have to admit, it felt much more like a season finale than I was expecting, because at the end of last episode, I know both you and I were like, wait, what? This was the second to last one, and I had no idea how they were even going to conclude things. And so I'll give them credit. They did conclude it, but it felt forced. It felt like, oh, it's the season finale. Better wrap this up.
Yeah. They could have done it different, I think, and it still could have felt like a season finale.
Also, can I just say the preacher still being alive was out of left field for me.
Yes, it was. I was like, what? That's exactly what I thought when I saw him up there.
I thought that was one too far, where they keep pulling these characters. They're like, hey, guess what? This character's still around. It was like, you have to start making up your mind or laying the groundwork for some of this stuff. Like, I can accept Lala coming back because they built in a really good explanation for why he was gone for so long. But it's still, like, you can't just not reference these characters for half a season or for a full season and then just pull them back with no explanation and just be like, oh, yeah, they're back now. Like, people who are watching, who are fans of your show, who aren't binge-watching this on Netflix, they haven't seen those characters for literally for months. Like, we hadn't seen Lala, I would say, for close to a year in like, real time. Like, I understand in the show it wasn't that long, but for us watching it, it'd been, like, a year since we'd seen that character. And then the preacher, as far as you and I were concerned, I think has been dead since December, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Like, it's been months. And I could have sworn the show actually said that he was dead.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did, too. That's...
And then they just changed their mind. Like, no, actually, he's not dead. To be honest with you, I didn't really think that was a character that needed to not be dead. Like, I don't feel like he's an important enough character on the show that he needed to come back.
Agreed.
I could be wrong. I mean, the way they brought him back, too, like, those scenes were frankly unnecessary. All they did for me was confuse me. I was like, wait, what? I couldn't even focus on what he was saying because I was like, you're alive?
Unless he's some sort of metahuman they haven't revealed yet, it doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean?
I can honestly accept the fact that he was able to survive the poison. I can believe that. That's fair. But have him survive the poison after like an episode, not after half a season.
Well, another person we see that's going to be coming back, we saw Khalil in suspended animation.
Honestly, I have to say, maybe that was why they brought the preacher back, because they were like, well, if you think that's weird. It was almost like they softened the blow. Like, you were so confused about the preacher still being alive that the reveal of Khalil was like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, if you're just going to bring everybody back.
I don't want to see everybody come back, though.
It reminds me. This is going to be a weird reference. There was a movie in the mid-2000s that Robert Downey Jr. was in called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And towards the end of that movie, there's a joke. It's not spoilers. You find out a character is still alive, and Robert Downey Jr. has been narrating this. He says, and I know what you're thinking. If we're going to bring him back, we might as well bring everybody back. And they start like parading in dead characters, and then Abe Lincoln walks in. I sort of expected Abe Lincoln to be in none of the other pods at that point. I was like, I mean, if we're going to bring the preacher and Khalil back, like, let's just bring everyone. Do we have any dinosaurs cooking in there, too? Actually, they survived the meteor.
I don't know. For as good as this show has been, I thought this season finale just felt weak to me. The other point I wanted to make is it felt like the show was wrapping things up like it was going to be canceled or something. Did that feel like that to you?
A little bit, yes. It felt almost like in case we're canceled, this at least ends the show in a satisfying way. I would agree with that.
The weird thing is, though, they've been greenlit for season 3 for quite a while.
I know. I don't think they were ever in danger. Yeah, I would agree with that. It does feel like a oh crap, we might get canceled. We better make sure the show ends on a satisfying note.
Yeah.
It also, I think one reason it felt it was rushed, but it didn't really feel like the show. It almost felt like it was trying to be. I know I talk about sometimes I want there to be more superhero stuff within the show, but it almost felt like the show leaned too heavily into that and was like, it's going to be a big superhero climax and forgot what the show was. Which is weird. I know that's a weird criticism coming from you because usually I want more of it, but it almost felt like they went too far in that direction and kind of lost their identity a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that. All right, well, let's talk about the end of the episode where Odell confronts the Pierce family about a potential metahuman war with Markovia. If this was supposed to be a cliffhanger, I think it failed. Because I'm not sure why Odell revealed his hand already. I mean, the threat's not there yet. You wouldn't think he'd step in until there was an actual threat there. Not, oh, there could possibly be a threat.
I wouldn't argue that it was a cliffhanger. I feel like it was more like this is what season three is about.
Yeah, but I think
it was just setting the stage. To me, it didn't feel like it was meant to be a cliffhanger.
Okay, that's what I got when I was watching. I was like, is this supposed to be a cliffhanger? Because it doesn't feel like one.
Maybe we're just getting into semantics, but to me, it just felt like it was just a stage setter. Like it was just. This is what next season's going to be about.
Yeah, it feels like Odell is going to start trying to control the Pierce family.
Yeah, I almost wouldn't be surprised if he's the villain that's defeated at the end of the season.
Which I thought he might be in this. I remember talking about that a few episodes ago, thinking that Odell might be the one defeated at the end of this season.
I almost would have preferred that. It wouldn't have totally made sense, to be honest, but I would have preferred it.
Yeah. But, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see till next season to see where they're going to go with this. Obviously, they're going to do the Markovia thing, but I'm curious what they're going to do with Tobias. I feel like he's still going to be manipulating things from prison, at least till he gets out.
I hope so. He's such a good villain. I don't think the show is doing itself a favor with him. And I really... Unlike with some of the other shows, I don't feel like they were dragging him on. Like we talked about this. They kept him so separate from what Black Lightning was doing. It didn't feel like they were overusing that character.
Yeah. So just an odd choice, I think. All right, let's move on to our final episode for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 6, Doom Patrol Patrol. In this episode, we learn that Mr. Nobody is a douchebag. He tells Jane to find the Doom Patrol, and she does. Oh man,
can we just talk about how great the plot that the Doom Patrol they falsely remember foiling Mr. Nobody on?
Yes,
a jukebox floating in on a hot air butt balloon. God, this show is so ridiculous. I just love it. It's so funny.
And the twist in this, it was dark. Great. Yeah, it was dark.
Great and dark. Yeah.
And Mr. Nobody was behind the new team finding the old team. Like I said, he's just being a douchebag. I mean, he sends Jane there because apparently Jane was supposed to have a room there. I mean, it looked like she was supposed to have been locked up at some point. Maybe because she was a little out of control, I'm guessing. But then that didn't end up happening. But man, what a twist.
Yeah. Just a really enjoyable twist, too. Like, you felt like something was wrong. And then it was like a twist that totally made sense, but then also made it even more intriguing. Like, it wasn't like the twist was sort of the reward of the episode. It was almost like the twist, and you got to find out more after that, and that was what was even more interesting to me, at least.
Right. It even shows how unstoppable Mr. Nobody is. I mean, you've already had one failed Doom Patrol, and then he's just playing with them pretty much.
Yeah.
So he's a great villain. This is just a great episode. Lots of funny stuff in it. That's what I love about Doom Patrol. It's serious and it's funny.
And it's very, I love how it gets experimental with stuff that it does, But it always pays off because it just fits the show so well. When they do something kind of weird, it just makes sense because of the nature of the show.
Yeah.
It's a very well-written show. It's just all of the stories that they're telling are really engaging and interesting on their own right, but they're also telling a really interesting overall story at the same time. I just cannot recommend this show enough. It is so good.
Right. And we get some good character moments too. Cyborg and his father. I mean, his dad's finally letting him go, which is, I'm kind of glad of that. So, you know, I'm ready for Cyborg to be more out from under his father's shadow.
Agreed.
So, I really like that. I like seeing more of Rita's history and her former relationship in this episode. I thought that was pretty good. I love seeing the moment where Negative Man's energy being basically took off that Psy helmet and handed it to Rita. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I like it too because we keep getting little bit of flashes of what this team could eventually look like when they're operating functionally. And it's cool getting those little teasers of like them sort of kind of slowly figuring it out.
But will they ever figure it out? It seems like a long path.
Oh, I agree. I don't think they'll figure it out until the end of the season. But the thing that I like about this show is it doesn't feel like you have to keep the team dysfunctional, if that makes sense. I don't feel like it has to be like Legends where the team is always slightly incompetent. Like, I think this show could still work just based on its premise of weird. Like, they can have the team be competent eventually, but still be able to go on these just bizarre, weird adventures and still have it work and still be funny.
Yeah. And you're going to have, even if the team's working together, you're going to still have moments where somebody is going to go off the rails because they don't agree with something and right. Send the whole team into a tangent of weirdness.
Agreed.
So it's just a great show.
It's really, and it's something I think the DC app really, like, it was a win that kind of needed, like, because it's really, it sort of justifies its existence to a certain extent, because they can sort of point to that and be like, see, look, this is why we're doing this. Look at the content that we're able to create using this platform.
Yeah, I mean,
because, like, I like Titans, but to be honest with you, Titans is not that show. Titans is not a show that justifies the DC app, in my opinion.
And Doom Patrol definitely is one.
It is, because Doom Patrol is the type of show that legitimately could win some Emmy Awards, I think. Titans is a good show. It's a show that you would expect to be on the DC app, but it's not a show that, like, executives would look at the DC app and go like, I'm not sure we can cancel it because we'd have to get rid of Titans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when they're looking at it, they'll be like, ooh, I don't know that we can get rid of this Doom Patrol right now. That, to me at least. I mean, I don't know how they think, but... From my perspective, that's at least how I would be looking at it.
So, and I think a lot of people who are DC fans that would like this type of show, if they don't have the app, they're missing out. And I don't know if they're going to put this on any other platform when they're done showing it on the DC Universe app.
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Europe get Titans on Netflix?
Yes.
Or at least the UK?
Yes, they did, because one of the friends of the station over there, can't think of his name off the top of my head, I asked him, because he had posted about Titans coming to Netflix, and I had asked him if it had come on over there yet, and he said yes, and he was watching it. So I'm guessing they'll probably get Doom Patrol over there also.
I hope they do. It is.
Which is cool.
This show needs to reach as big an audience as it can because it's so good. It just needs to get the word out there.
Robert McIntyre, couldn't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's been watching Titans out there, so it'll be interesting to see if he watches Doom Patrol too. I'll have to ask him about it once the show finishes up here on the DC Universe app. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Since we talked about it and you mentioned that you hadn't really read much about this character, the new 52 version of Dr. Fate that we've seen reemerge in Justice League Dark, the first volume of that book, in case you're curious to check it out, which I recommend, it was a pretty good run. was by Paul Levitz, and the first volume is called The Blood Price. Dr. Fate, Volume 1, The Blood Price. I own it personally. I really like it, and I'm very excited to see that they brought the character back, because it was such a... I thought it was a really kind of interesting take on the character, and I'm glad that it hasn't just kind of fallen to the wayside with the sort of end of the New 52.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Went and saw it in the theater the other day at the Second Run Theater. That's freaking awesome.
Man, that is such a good movie.
Oh,
my gosh.
I loved it. And I'm a big Spider-Man fan. One of my two biggest characters when I was a kid for collecting comics, Batman, of course, was number one, but Spider-Man was number two. I used to collect Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man. So I was a big Spider-Man fan too, and this was great. Seeing all the iterations of Spider-Man in it was awesome. Of course, one complaint I have was they didn't have the Ben Reilly Spider-Man.
Next time. It could happen next time.
And the other one is Spider-Man 2099. I wouldn't mind seeing Miguel in that also.
Did you sit there for the end of the credits?
No, I did not.
I'll see... Spider-Man 99 popped up, that's all I'm saying.
Did he? Oh, man. I'll have to get on YouTube, see if I can see it on there.
But it's a really funny scene. Highly recommend you find it.
I wasn't, because it was Sony, I didn't expect there to be a after credit scene. I should have known
Rookie
better.
Rookie mistake.
I'll have to check that out. I plan on getting a copy of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, either DVD or digital. Hopefully digital, because I like having digital copies of my stuff. So
there have been some really good Spider-Man movies, but I honestly think this is the best Spider-Man movie. It is that good.
It is really good, and it makes sense that it won some awards.
Yeah, absolutely deserved. I imagine most people that listen to our podcast have seen that, but if you haven't, you seriously need to go watch that movie. I know we're a DC podcast, but my God, what a good movie.
Yeah, and Cletus and I are just not just DC fans. We do we do like other stuff, so.
I'm pretty openly a fan of all comics, so.
All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we're going to have Aquaman, Batman, Justice League, Naomi, Nightwing, and some of the TV shows we're going to have are Supergirl, Arrow, and Doom Patrol. Of course, Black Lightning just had their season finale, so we're not going to see them back till next year. And The Flash is on hiatus until April 16th. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.